Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Yesterday in Manhattan, 1,000 Uber and Lyft drivers blocked rush hour traffic, demanding better wages and working conditions. A lot has changed since the rideshare service Uber seemed like a win-win all around. Drivers made their own schedules, passengers got door-to-door service on demand, Uber became a verb, and for a long time, Uber was considered a highly valuable private tech company. But as I said, a lot has changed, and maybe we all should have seen it coming, including who runs the company. That should have been a sign. Uber was founded 10 years ago and grew by methodically moving from town to town, establishing transportation networks and recruiting local drivers, but also breaking rules and ignoring norms. And its maverick founder was both its strength, but also perhaps its greatest weakness. Award-winning New York Times tech correspondent Mike Isaac has been covering Uber since 2014. He has a new book that came out earlier this month. It's called Super Pumped: The Battle for Uber. It's based on hundreds of interviews with Uber employees, current and former, and it's a cautionary tale about how a small San Francisco startup turned into an ill-fated corporate Silicon Valley potential nightmare. Welcome, Mike.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I have to ask, I know the answer, but the title alone, super pumped.
I still laugh every time I hear it. So.
It is, I think it's number 12 on the list of Uber's values. What does it mean to be super pumped, and why did you choose it for the title of a book about Uber?
Totally. So, I mean, I think, you know, big corporations always have sort of these lists of company values, and usually a lot of like corporate speak and pablum. Tech companies, though, I think seem to be a little bit more high flying and very idealistic. Google's was "Don't be evil," and Amazon had a list of 14 that were like customer obsessed. Uber's were slightly different. Travis Kalanick, the former CEO, wanted to create 14 values to shape Uber's company, Super Pumped being my favorite one. It was this idea that employees should be quote unquote super pumped to take on the day and to take on any sort of challenges that are in their way. And being super pumped gave them superpowers. I think Travis kind of ran all of his values through like a bro speak translation engine, you know, just to kind of get there. And for me, the title really just kind of encapsulates both these like lofty ideals of the Valley, but also particularly Uber's bro-ish culture and ended up what, you know, it's kind of tongue in cheek, but also ended up what being the thing that did them in the end.
I'm going to read a couple of them just so we can set the table for people.
Yeah.
Always
yeah.
Be hustling, principled confrontation, customer obsession, make magic. Yep. All right, everybody, you've got the idea. When you first started covering Uber back in 2014 for The Times, you called it Uber's glory days. What was the atmosphere around Uber 5 years ago?
Yeah, totally. I mean, like you were saying, I think around 2014 was probably when it just started becoming a real verb for the public. Like, I'm going to Google this or I'm going to Uber over there. Back in the day, I was living in New York, and I remember Lyft was really trying to push into the city too. And so Uber and Lyft were locked in these price wars where they would subsidize rides for people. And everyone, I think really, you know, everyone except taxi drivers really loved the service because they were essentially getting free rides all over the New York and other places. And I think at the time too, I remember it was probably like every other month where they were able to raise the next $1 billion in private capital. And it seemed like they were just this sort of inevitability. They were gonna be everywhere. They had tons of money to fight. And, you know, there was hints of the CEO being kind of a jerk towards the end of 2014 is when things started really getting gnarly. But at that point, they just seemed like this juggernaut that wasn't going to stop.
Just so people remind people, what was the genesis story of Uber? What was that first seed that was planted?
Yeah. I think this kind of sets the tone for the whole thing, too. Back in the day, so Travis Kalanick was not actually the original founder. Back in the day, there's this tech guy who created this company StumbleUpon, if you remember that.
Uh-huh.
It was sort of like pre-Facebook social network. And he, you know, he was a millionaire, but he had problems getting around San Francisco. In 2009, it was very difficult to catch a cab, and, you know, public transportation was unreliable. And he kind of wanted this thing where, you know, and then also the iPhone was coming out. And he wanted this thing where, you know, you could just press a button on your phone and have a car come to you. And he was inspired by watching Casino Royale, the remake with Daniel Craig, and seeing this sort of baller, quote unquote, baller mobile show up on this radar. So he liked the idea of having a black car come to him at the time. And that was the original Uber before it became anyone can sort of drive you. But it was very much I can arrive in style.
And when did co-founder and former CEO Travis Kalanick come in?
Yeah. So Travis was a serial entrepreneur. He had made like a small sale and was kind of trying to relax and become a venture capitalist, I guess, on his newfound winnings in 2009. And Garrett Camp essentially wanted this service but didn't want to run it. So he called Travis Kalanick up and was like, "You got to do this for me." So shortly after they created the idea, Travis started basically running the service and did so until 2017 for the next like 8 or 9 years.
In your book, Super Pump, The Battle for Uber, my guest is Mike Isaac, by the way, you really describe Travis's early life, who he was as a kid, how he related to his parents. And he had something happen to him early on in his career that really soured him on sort of investor relations. And it seemed to me that it really sort of set the tone for how he wanted to interact with the rest of the world. Will you tell people that story?
Yeah, totally. I think, so, you know, in the Valley, in startup world, in any sort of venture capital situation, you know, the idea that VCs are founder friendly, that they're going to just give you money and support you, is really important to venture capitalists. Travis had the almost opposite experience. He created this company called Scour, which was kind of like a proto Napster, I would say. You know, it was basically a way to kind of steal music and movies and stuff off the internet. And he had a VC named Mike Ovitz, who would actually, he was famous for his super agent days in Hollywood. And Ovitz was backing Travis. And then, you know, the MPAA and RIAA and all these companies in the entertainment industry basically sued Travis's company into the ground. And Ovitz kind of turned on Travis and was like, "Oh, okay, these are my, I'm an amateur VC, but I would rather side with the entertainment companies." And I think that initial betrayal really set the tone for Travis, where he saw VCs as unable to be trusted and always will be out to get you. I think later he said something along the lines of, you know, a VC will be ready to take you down, so you have to sort of watch your back. And I think that really, he carried that with him, especially throughout his time at Uber.
So Travis comes aboard Uber. How would you describe his leadership style? How would you describe the way he and the company interacted with local municipalities as they started to invade them, really?
One of my favorite quotes, I was talking to an ex-employee, and this person said, you know, "The law is not what is written, it's what is enforced." And I think the idea that Uber basically just had a ton of money, a bunch of different strike team employees, and just flooded into cities and started spinning up and running quickly. And I think local governments and you know, transportation officials, officers of the law, were just completely blindsided by Uber pushing into these cities. And they weren't actually able to enforce the law. And I think that really worked in Uber's favor. And, you know, like, people really liked the service when it started happening. If you remember, you know, taxi cabs were not the greatest experience, or they might not be able to accept credit cards or whatever, and with Uber you could just click your phone and get a ride anywhere. And I think that was a real strength early on. And Travis kind of wanted to empower all of his employees to run their own cities individually. But I also think, you know, later he kind of hired a lot of people that were like him, you know, very aggressive, bro-ish types, I would say. And that ended up being a liability when you sort of empower all your employees without really being able to control them.
So yeah, the outward facing is describing Uber going into these cities, flooding the zone. Inward facing, if he called workers Uberettos, folks who work there.
I don't quite know how to pronounce Uberettos.
Uberettos?
You know how they're like Googlers or Tweeps or whatever? Uberettos was the noun for Uber.
Okay, so Uberettos, inside, inward facing. What was it like to work at Uber under Travis?
I think I describe it in the book as like an admixture of Thomas Hobbes, Wolf of Wall Street, and Animal House, right? Which is the idea that you just sort of have to fight to survive, and you do whatever you can to make your numbers, and that included pitting employees against each other. Travis really liked the idea of, let's go back to that value of principled confrontation, right, or meritocracy and toe-stepping. Internally, like, there would be these fights, and he enjoyed watching divisions fight against each other because he believed that eventually you would come out on top and something better would be created. Maybe that happened, but I think mostly it involved like wasting millions of dollars and having like really crazy aggressive divisions fighting each other. One employee told me he got like a coffee cup thrown at his head when he wasn't able to like make his numbers, and another manager in Brazil threatened his subordinates with a baseball bat. It was like really insane how this culture of aggression kind of went overboard. And even was encouraged by Travis just initially, at least.
My guest is Mike Isaac. The name of his new book is Super Pumped, The Battle for Uber. When did things start to take a turn downward for Uber?
Yeah. No, I mean, 2017 was just, if the first, you know, 5-6 years of Uber were marked by this upward ascent and hockey stick growth, then 2017 was the year it all fell apart. I think Travis got a lot of heat for being on this business council for President Trump and early on. Internally, his employees were unhappy with that. I think he also, you know, there like scandal after scandal came out in really short order in 2017. There were managers who were harassing subordinates. A woman, a former employee named Susan Fowler, wrote a memo and talked about her history of harassment at the company. An engineering manager who was just hired had been accused of sexual harassment at Google. The company was sued by Waymo for stealing, for theft of trade secrets. Waymo is the self-driving car division of Google. It was just sort of like, oh my God, one gnarly thing after another. And then also we reported on this software tool that they essentially used to break into cities and avoid law enforcement, which some people called obstruction of justice. So it was one thing after another, and I think probably the final straw was a video of Travis sort of berating a driver and yelling at him and saying that they needed to take responsibility for their own stuff. And it just seemed like everything bad about Uber was encapsulated in that video. In the CEO in particular.
You wrote in the book, it was the middle of the winter of 2017, and Jeff Jones, the man responsible for Uber's public perception, was trying to shake everyone in the top ranks of the company awake. Uber didn't have an image problem. Uber had a Travis problem. What's an example of that?
I mean, I think Travis was just, you know, one of the things that made him so strong was his complete willingness to fight to the very end, right? Like, mm-hmm. Everyone I talked to when I was reporting this book out said, I've never met anyone who's willing to fight as hard for something as he was. And his entire life was devoted to this company. That said, he would argue every point down to the very end, no matter how small. And, you know, sometimes I think that just, you know, became a liability. He made a ton of different enemies in his wake. All these local governments and cities around the world didn't trust Uber. They had a bunch of baggage as they were trying to later negotiate on friendly terms on how to operate in these cities. And you know, I think this video, again, when he's arguing with the driver, maybe a more mature CEO would have been able to get to a point where they could, you know, calm them down or just be like, yeah, I hear you. Let's try to talk this out. But he was just incapable of doing that and would just push and argue to the very end. And so that ended up being he ended up being right. His investors later on in the book decide it's time for him to go and organize a secret coup that we go into in pretty great detail.
I do want to follow up on the way drivers are treated, because as I started the segment talking about that protest yesterday, and I know from your book, at one point Uber used to refer to their drivers as supply. Just objectively, from your point of view, are the drivers, people who drive for Uber, are they open to exploitation?
Well, I mean, for a long time in this company's history, I think the way of looking at drivers was really cold, rational, an economist's view of what a marketplace looked like, right? And you can maybe abstract that internally, you know, to this is how we should make things work. But when you're a driver who's getting paid, you know, say like $25, $30 an hour, or promised $50 an hour to start, and then it gets cut in half, and then it gets cut again and again and again, and you can't really depend on a steady income over time, you know, you start getting confused and wonder where Uber is on this and what happened to the early promises. And, you know, I remember back in 2015, I would talk to a bunch of drivers, and Uber's same response was, you know, they will make up the amount that they lost in the number of rides and volume over time, and really had no actual sympathy for the drivers. It was very much, here's a torrent of numbers to explain why this will be better for you in the long run. I think it took until Travis was pushed out of the company for more driver empathy from the actual company. I still think they have a long way to go, but they are at least somewhat more advanced than the days where drivers had absolutely no voice. But I think drivers are clearly showing on the streets of New York that it's not enough and they need more.
My guest is Mike Isaac. The name of his new book is Super Pumped, The Battle for Uber. When you came up the title, we understand the super pumped part. What's the battle part?
Yeah, so the real drama, I think, is towards the end, after this 2017, or probably the last third of the book, this nightmare year, 2017, Travis ultimately becomes this main character. And it was kind of hard writing a book where you don't really like any of the main characters in the book. But I kind of treated it, I think, as like the, you know, the TV show Succession, where you don't really like anyone, but you also do love the characters.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that. And I think towards the end, everyone is just sort of fighting for keeping this company alive, because after 2017 starts really hammering them, their business starts going downwards, people start leaving en masse to use Lyft. The idea that Uber could actually start to fail or be in real financial trouble is suddenly a reality. And so ultimately there's a fight between Travis and this board, members of the board of the company, that goes down, where they try to push him out of the company and Travis fights back. And it's all very much in public and splashed in the front page of the New York Times and all these other sort of publications. And it was just an amazing, like, corporate battle to see play out. Usually it's behind the scenes, but it was all very public, and everyone was just trying to knife each other to stay on top. And it was fun to report on, at least.
Yeah, it's going to be a great Netflix show. So who is running Uber now? Have things changed dramatically or even incrementally?
Yeah, so 2017, there's this crazy fight. Dara Khosrowshahi ends up being the next CEO of Uber. He sort of fell into the job, since neither faction of the company actually wanted him to be the CEO. Some people say that they lucked into him having it. They call him like the dad of Silicon Valley. He's a very calm, level-headed guy. And I do think that a lot of the crazy elements internally, at least around their culture problems, have smoothed out. You know, they don't have $25 million parties in Las Vegas with Beyonce as the guest star, which is something that Travis had in 2015. And they don't have as many, at least, public harassment complaints and ideas that sexual harassment is being ignored. I think the thing now is, like, can this company be a profitable company, an actual business? And for 10 years of being a private company, it was you had no real insight into their finances. And now that they IPO'd and we can kind of look at the balance sheet, there are real questions about, can he get to a point of profitability? So I think Khosrowshahi's real mandate is, look, this is going to be a business. Mm-hmm. We can make money, and we got this. We'll see.
The name of the book is Super Pumped, The Battle for Uber. My guest has been Mike Isaac. Mike, thanks a lot for being on All of It.
This is awesome. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to all of it on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. I will meet you at the top of the hour.